Welcome, everyone. This session is called Building a Bulletproof BitLocker. And we're going to spend the next 75 minutes with this topic. My name is Sami Laiho. I'm from Finland. I'm an MVP in the Windows OS for the past 4 years. I'm also a senior technical fellow at my own company and also working on the same title at Finland's biggest training company called Sovelto. If you want to follow me on Twitter, please do. I tweet a lot, hopefully, not only amount-wise, but I hope the tweets are good as well. And I got a free newsletter if you want to get those up. I have some deliverables for this session posted on Twitter. I actually posted it about an hour ago. So you can get those from there. There's a reason why I'm here. I've been an instructor for about 15 years. I've been instructing both scuba diving and Windows troubleshooting and security and anything related to Microsoft infrastructure, basically. That's my first ever XP deep dive in 2001. That's the, at least as far as I've been able to figure out, the only troubleshooting session ever hosted below the Atlantic Ocean. So I'm also a open water scuba instructor as well. It's more of a hobby. Another reason why I'm here is because I'm from Finland and we're talking about encryption. And if you know the guy called J.R.R. Tolkien, who wrote the saga of Lord of the Rings, he actually chose Finnish as the base for the language of the elves that they speak in the movie, because Finnish was the only language that he could find that no one else in the world could understand a bit. So we've got a built-in encryption in our country. We can actually encrypt anything. You've got those screen protectors on your PCs. I don't use them. No one can understand anything what's on my computer. So that's the reason. We can also encrypt all communication instantly. For example, I can turn on encryption for communication like this. Voisko kaikki suomalaiset sanoa kovaa ääneen hyvää huomenta? Off, okay. It makes our lives a bit hard, because when most of you get this administrator, or the Spanish get the administrador, we get this. So you can try and hack our computers, go ahead. Yes, you actually need a special keyboard to even get in. Finnish is easy, so I'm going to just teach you some quick lessons in Finnish first. We'll start with something really easy. So the word dog in Finnish, you actually have a few different versions of the word dog. So you can start with this. After you learned these, I'm not actually even there yet, because they're still these. Okay, it's an opening line just for you to give me some slack on my English jokes. You know where I'm coming from. It's not my native language, and I'm trying to translate my jokes from Finnish to English all the time. So here we are. I'm best known globally probably because of a project called Vioski. Vioski is a free replacement for Steady State. So it does kiosk machines for Windows 7 and 8. As Windows 8 can reset or refresh itself in the matter of minutes, Vioski can do it in a matter of seconds. It's done because I was responsible for building a Windows 7 implementation for the capital of Finland, Helsinki. They couldn't go through with the Windows 7 implementation before they had something for the libraries and schools for kiosk machines that need to revert back to the same thing every single time they're started. My company is called Adminize. Adminize builds software. Basically, the only software that is that we sell is the one up here, so you can get a one-time admin passwords and get rid of changing local admin passwords as well. And there's my blog address if you want to check the deliverables from there as well. They should be posted there also. So some housekeeping. After the session, I'll exchange business cards for swag. So if you've got business cards, about 21st can get it now, and the rest can leave the cards and get it later. But I actually have the official Järjestelmän valvoja baseball caps. with headlights. So this should give you some respect. I've actually used it by itself quite a lot. I'm gonna take it off anyway for now. I've got plenty of those. Okay. Oh, here we have a cool picture. What are we gonna go through? We're gonna go through some basics of why we need BitLocker and why we need encryption at the start. Then we're gonna talk about BitLocker itself. We're gonna do some penetration scenarios on how BitLocker might be tried to penetrate and why it's not possible, or if it is possible. Then we're gonna go through a few different levels of security. So there are different kinds of scenarios for you to implement different in a few different ways. I also have some policies to strengthen the protection, so group policy can play a part in this. Then we're gonna talk a little bit about backup. As always, backup is almost the last topic, so if we won't have time, then we won't. No, actually, we'll get through that as well. And then we have a small penetration challenge in the end. All right, why do we need encryption? There's basically two things why we need it. Data-wise, we need to protect the data, because there's over 800,000 devices stolen from the biggest airports of US and Europe combined every year. That doesn't include LATAM or Asia, so that's not even all. I bet at least a few devices get lost in China as well. Then there's another one, which is the most ridiculous one, because you just can't have a secure Windows which wouldn't be broken into with a single command. So you cannot have a secure Windows machine without BitLocker, because there's a single command that breaks everything from Windows XP up to Server 2012 R2 domain controllers. So we do need BitLocker for that reason as well. And then there's, of course, security decommissioning. instead of wiping all the data for 5 or 6 times per sector, you can just make sure you get rid of the encryption key itself, making it totally unreadable. And it's actually been included in the format command since Vista. We're gonna start instantly with the first demo. So let's just go through some basic cracking into a computer. I bet most of you know this. It should be something, it's on the internet freely available. So I'm gonna log on. This was actually, because of Windows 8, and I've been training for 15 years and I teach a lot of courses. So for the Windows 8 courses, I needed an account which needed to be a live account. So I thought this would be a good joke, but it seems that it's really hard to get any email. Because every single time someone asks me, what's your email address, and I tell them it's firstname.lastname@live.fi, they send me an SMS asking why sami.liho@live.fi is not responding. And then they have to reply to, no, it's firstname. It was supposed to be a good joke, but turned out against me. But it's been my beloved demo account since, so. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna prevent myself from getting into this computer. I'm gonna do it in a few ways. So let's just open up a command prompt and let's see what kind of users we have here. So we got administrator and Mr. First Name. So first of all, what we could do is we'll just disable Mr. First Name. I don't wanna change his password, so. Let's just deactivate that one. And then I'll change my administrator password. There's something that no one can understand, so I'll use the random variable, not ransom, that's a different one. So the idea behind this is that you cannot know your own password because the random variable changes every time. So I have no idea what the actual password right now is. Then what we'll do is we'll just restart this machine. And we'll restart with a ISO file in the virtual machine. So this machine has a ISO file, which is actually just in Windows 8.1 installation media. You can do this in a few different ways. You can change your layouts for for example, for me to finish, or you can just press Shift F10, which is a shortcut for the command prompt. And I'll change the font size a little bit here so you can see it better. Change it here. Okay, cool. Let's find the let's find the Windows installation folder. So it's here. Windows, CD, System32, and then we'll do a single copy command and copy cmd.exe on top of sethc.exe. You get to see this on the internet quite a lot with utilman or displayswitch.exe, but I always use sethc.exe because it's supported on every single OS from XP to Server 2012 R2. So it's the only one that works on everyone. DisplaySwitch.exe works only from Windows 7. Utilman.exe works only from Vista. But this one works on everything. Plus, it's the coolest. So what we'll do next is we'll just restart this. And let it boot up to Windows. Now I could try and log on, but I won't. There's no use for me to doing it right now. So I could try to log on with firstname.lastname. And I wouldn't be able to get into the computer at all. So what I'm going to do is, let's change back to this. I'll hit the shift key 5 times. So that's what makes it the coolest. When someone asks you, like, how could I get into my computer? You just tell them, just bang on the shift key as hard as you can and quickly as you can. So brute force yourself in. Yeah, here we go. So let's change the fonts again. I promise next time I'll do this for the default profile, so I won't have to do this every time. You should be able to see that. So here we go. And first of all, of course, the most important is that we are running Mrs. System, so we have total control of the machine. So let's just do, let's change the password for administrator, and let's activate the first name account as well. There we go. If you're wondering why you can't see the administrator account here, that's because this is a workgroup computer. So the workgroup computer, when you activate a user account, it won't be seen here instantly. You would have to reboot the machine to get new users here. So actually, I probably forgot to activate it, did I? Why live demos never work the way you rehearse? Yeah, this one is not activated, so let's activate it first. Net user. Administrator. Active. Yes. Here we go. And then what we'll do in this case, because it's a workgroup computer, we will just quickly reboot it again. See, it works. Not from the DVD. And let's see. Here we go. Got the administrator account up and running with the password QWERTY1. And welcome. Here we go. Okay. So one single command breaks every single Windows. So you need BitLocker. What does BitLocker do? Basics of BitLocker. BitLocker, first of all, encrypts every single sector that you have on your computer. And it's protected with a key called the FVEK. And this full volume encryption key is there just to make our lives a bit easier. There's a key which encrypts every sector, but this key is actually never used for anything. Because if this key would get compromised, you would have to change every single sector on your machine with the new key. So there's no use of using this key for anything. So that's the first key that actually encrypts everything. And then we have another key that encrypts the FVEK, called the VMK. And then the VMK is actually protected with a protector that you choose. And now we have different kinds of protectors. We could have a password protection without any TPM chips, so any single computer can have a BitLocker with a password protection since Windows 8. And this is great for virtual machines, because virtual machines don't have TPMs, so you can actually demonstrate the use of BitLocker on any Windows machine as long as any virtual machine as long as you're running Windows 8 or 8.1 or Server 2012 or R2. You just need a normal password, or you can have a USB key. If you have a USB key, the whole encryption key is stored on the USB key. The bad thing about both of these is that this will never attach your hard drive to the hardware below it. So there's no dependencies between these two, meaning that you can take the hard drive, inject it to any hardware, boot it up, get asked for a password or USB, and boot it up. So if you want to make it more secure, you absolutely need a TPM. So TPM is a chip, a physical chip on older computers, or on newer computers, it might be just part of your UEFI firmware. So it might be a software-based TPM, as, for example, Surface has a software-based for the ARM processor. So TPM protection means that the TPM reads values that cannot be changed afterwards, and these TPMs can be protected against any changes in your boot configuration. So just to simplify things, we can have your encryption key stored on the TPM, and the TPM can be protected with a hash value, which is calculated from all of your boot files and some else, so UEFI and BIOS content as well. If anything changes in your boot environment, just to put it as a simple example, you would try to boot up my machine with a Linux. You wouldn't be able to open up the BitLocker encrypted file because your boot environment is totally different. The hash value is not near the original one. It makes it really, really simple and also secure. If you want, you can have more. So you can have TPM plus a PIN code, meaning that TPM is protected against these changes in the boot configuration, but it's also protected with a PIN code. That's the most commonly used one. So you get two-factor authentication as a mental proof. It's a mental proof of ownership. You know this certain number or letters which will open up the TPM and let you access the computer. If a mental proof is not good, you can also have a physical proof in the form of a USB key. But in this example, half of the encryption key is stored on the TPM, which is protected against the boot configuration changes. And the other half of the encryption key is stored on the USB key. What's the difference between physical and mental proof of ownership? I can't believe it, but I was actually in a conversation. There's some people from Finland here, so they know perhaps who I'm talking about, but there's a public sector, a city in Finland. And I was in a meeting talking to them on what kind of decisions should they be doing with BitLocker. I couldn't believe myself, but we were in a situation where their bosses started to talk to me about Finnish nurses. So we were talking about Finnish nurses going outside of Finland to conferences. That's okay. So we're going to implement BitLocker and do this and this. And then suddenly one of their bosses raises his hand and says, we need to use USB keys. Like, why? Well, we need to use USB keys because we want to have a physical proof of ownership. Because if our nurses go outside of Finland and they get tortured, they can just throw away the key or swallow it. I was like, okay, I knew that it might be a tough profession to be a nurse in Finland, but you got to be kidding me? You can't use a PIN code because you could be tortured to give the PIN code. I told this to Chris from Microsoft, who was auditing my slides, and we were talking about my session, which I'm going to have here, and I told him this story, and he just told that it just might be, you know, that from whenever you tell that to the people are going to think that you, Finland, have some badass nurses. So you can decide. But there are different ways of using it. You could even actually combine these. You could have a TPM which is protected with a USB key that has half of the key, half of the key staying on the TPM, and then you have a PIN code protecting the TPM. So you need all of these. Or since Windows 8, you can also have network unlock. Network unlock is for UEFI, Windows 8 or 8.1 machines only, and it stores the encryption or the decryption key in WDS, Windows Deployment Services, server role. So whenever your computer is on the local network, I mean your company network, it can read the key from the WDS and open without asking anything. But if you take your computer out of your company's network, you will be asked for a PIN code. Why are we talking about this? That's because security only always has three sides to it. It's always a compromise between security, usability, and cost. You can only get two, not three. If people start talking about like usability versus security, I always draw a triangle telling them it's about security, cost, and usability. You can always get two, but never three. You can get a cheap solution that's secure, but it won't be that usable. You can get a cheap solution which is very usable, but won't be that secure. You can get a secure and usable solution, but it'll cost you quite a lot. If you have a PIN code, the bad thing is that when you get service packs, or if you ever will get any service packs again, but whenever you get a new Windows update and you need three reboots, someone would have to be there to type in the PIN code on every single reboot of the machine. So administration becomes a really pain in the butt. So that's why Network Unlock tries to solve this. As long as you are in the local network, the company network, you can just easily be rebooting your machines. When they go outside to more insecure environments, then you can get the PIN code in. And there's always a recovery key. There's a recovery key, basically a copy of the encryption key, which can be used in cases where you forgot your PIN code or you lost your USB stick. And the recovery key is encrypted with a protector as well. Those protectors are a numerical password of 48 numbers or a certificate. We'll get back to this later on. It's usually saved in Active Directory or MBAM. MBAM is Microsoft BitLocker Administration and Monitoring. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. So what's new in Windows 8 and 8.1? Since Windows 8, BitLocker has been available in cheaper SKUs, you could say. So it's available in Windows 8 Professional and Windows 8 Pro and Windows 8 Enterprise. As in Windows 7, it was only available in Enterprise. There's also the one smallest thing, which is one of the most important things, which is the ability for a limited user to finally change the PIN code. In Windows 7, without MBAM, it's fixed it. But without MBAM, you were actually in a situation where someone had their computer, forgot the PIN, called the help desk, got a 48-digit number, and had to type it in every single time when booting up the machine because they weren't able to change the PIN code that they've forgotten. So that's ridiculous. Now they can. Windows 8.1. Oh, sorry, Windows 8 also has this password-protected operating system drives, meaning that if you don't have a TPM, you can have a password. In Windows 7, you needed to have a USB stick. That was the only option for a computer without a TPM. Windows 8.1 gives us better protection against DMA attacks. We're going to go through those all, so let's skip it for now, get back to it a little bit later. But the main thing is that it brings a complete, cost-effective, secure, and easy solution for encryption. I've done this since 2006. I'm not working for Microsoft. I don't get paid for even having this session here, especially it's not about sales. So I'm totally behind this. In Windows 7, I was always in with two-factor authentication. In Windows 8.1, about 90% of my customers are using only TPM. How many Windows 8.1 seats do I have? Not about 25% of the amount of Windows 7, agreed, yes. But hopefully it'll go up. So it's a game changer. First of all, Microsoft's own recommendation changes. In Windows 7, they recommended that if you would like to have a secure BitLocker, you would have to have a PIN code and a TPM. In Windows 8.1, the recommendation is that primarily every customer goes with a TPM only, and only the high secure ones implement a two-factor authentication, being a USB key or a PIN code. That's the official statement. That should be something really good, of some good news, because your users would get one password less. And I think they are complaining to you about having too many passwords. So you can get rid of the password that they used to perhaps have with a third-party solution. When booting up their computer, first ask for a PIN code or password, and then logging on to Windows with a password. So get rid of one of those. They should be happier. How do people think they can penetrate BitLocker? So we're going to have a few scenarios. These are probably the most known ones, and I'm sure there are different environments. Now, if I would be talking to people from the military, I wouldn't be telling them that they should go with a single-factor authentication. They would have a two-factor authentication. I'm not trying to tell you that this will be suitable for every single situation or every single customer or every single environment. But to change your way of thinking from 90% have to have PIN codes to 10% need to have PIN codes. Probably the easiest one would be to guess a password. So just guess. Try to log on to Windows and guess a password. Try to guess the password of your BitLocker. If you're trying to guess the PIN code of your TPM, it'll get locked out, meaning that, for example, you get 5 tries to figure out the PIN code, and after that you will have to wait for 5 minutes to take another guess. If you guess wrong, you have to take 10 minutes to get another guess, 15 minutes, etc. This is basically implemented in the TPM hardware or the TPM firmware, so it's not a decision that you can 100% administer through Windows. It's a bit depends on the TPM. And then there's another one you could be trying to guess, which is the recovery password, and that's 48 digits, so you can count. That should be quite secure. Try to figure out 48-digit long passwords. DMA, direct memory access, that's something that's a hardware thingy, not a software thingy, which means that it concerns all operating systems, not only Windows. But DMA, direct memory access, is a feature of certain buses. So you might have FireWire bus, for example. So FireWire devices are weird in a way because they support DMA, which means that they can read and write to Windows memory of an online machine without any questions asked, without any passwords, without any authentication. They can just read the memory and write the memory. There's a really good reason why you cannot find a Windows 8.1 certified Surface which would have FireWire. It's not because of they are not wanting to have a faster bus. It's because of DMA. These only have USB 3. And there's a reason to it, which is the greatness of USB in the way that USB doesn't support DMA. And it's a very secure bus compared to the ones that you can see here. So the buses affected with DMA attacks are FireWire, Thunderbolt, Express Card, PCMCIA, PCI, PCIX, and PCI Express. Few of these are quite easy to get rid of, like Express Card, FireWire. Thunderbolt is coming to the picture quite heavily now, so we have even Windows 8.1 machines which have Thunderbolt in it. It's not an Apple thing anymore, it's also on the PC market. And Thunderbolt can be blocked, but it might not be as easy as FireWire. It's kind of easy to tell to your customers that we're going to use BitLocker, so we're just going to block your FireWire. That's not that bad. But if you're going to say that you're going to block the Thunderbolt, it might be more of an issue, because it's actually over 10 times faster than... No, sorry. It's over 10 times faster than USB 2, but it's also 10... It's also 2 to 4 times as fast as any USB 3, at least. So people might actually want to be looking at it. There are pre-built solutions for stealing passwords or getting BitLocker keys from the memory. www.lostpassword.com, company called Passware. They're doing a software that you can buy which will just extract BitLocker keys from a living machine. And there's a really cool one called windowscope.com. Windowscope does hardware which can read the memory. So there are Express cards or PCI Express cards that can be injected in the computer and change the memory or read the memory. Really dangerous Well, a Windows Scope hardware costs about $5,000. So it's not that cheap, but if we would be talking about people like NSA, that would be really, really cheap. So that's why we have to take it into consideration. Most of my customers would say that no one would buy a $5,000 equipment just to demo how to get through BitLocker, but I've actually seen it done, and I know quite many people who have bought these pieces of hardware just to test if it works. So 5,000, it's kind of a, for someone personally, it might be a big number, but for a company or institution, it's kind of a small number. Well, it's something that you should remember. It's the hardware's fault, not Microsoft's. So Microsoft doesn't have anything to do with the DMA attacks. The DMA is a built-in feature of this hardware bus. And it's same for every OS. Actually, Windows is more secure than Linux. I'm from Finland, so I'd like to be talking about Linux being more secure as it's a Finnish one, but anyway, it's more secure. Windows is more secure than Linux. Why? Because Windows can't use these buses, the most used ones, the FireWire and Thunderbolt, before the OS is up and running. Then it opens up the device driver, and you can use the bus. But in Linux, you can even boot from this. So it's there and usable a lot earlier, making it more dangerous. What about countermeasures for this one? You can block it with a policy. That's a quite easy one. So you can just block it with the KP article shown here. Whoa. So it's a KP article that has a few IDs that you have to inject into a group policy object. So you can block both of these. This might be changing, so you might have to change them as well, but I'll show you how to do that. Windows 8.1 is more secure than Windows 8. This is one of the features that gets so little space on any newsletters, but it's actually really important, especially for this session. So Windows 8.1 is the first ever Windows which actually blocks all new DMA connections if the computer is locked. Sorry, not new connections, meaning new devices. So if you have a device there already, and you've accepted it, and you've got the driver installed, that'll work. But if someone comes to your computer and it's locked, they cannot plug in a DMA device. In Windows 8, they can. Windows 8.1, no. By logo requirements, what are logo requirements? These are the requirements to get this Windows 8.1 certified logo. So the logo certification itself says that any instant go devices, so this one that can do the super standby mode, for example, Surface. These cannot have DMA ports. If they want to have the logo on it, they shouldn't have any DMA ports. Should be okay if you buy a certified machine. Now, the bad thing is that this certification is a few years old, and it doesn't have anything saying about Thunderbolt, meaning that you could have a Lenovo machine with Thunderbolt, and it could have the logo on the machine saying that it's certified for Windows 8.1, because there's no test of Thunderbolt ports. So they might be logo certified. Microsoft is driving something that should be up, I think, 2015, to drive the Thunderbolt hardware to be working with Windows in a way that they would be never turned on before someone logs on to the computer. So hopefully we will get that implemented, so it'll make it a bit easier. So, blocking DMA-capable devices. Let's take a Windows machine here. And how can you block those? You can open up gpedit.msc, just for a local group policy in this example. And there are two policies that you can use. You can prevent a use of a total class or a single hardware ID, sorry. Wait for the gpedit.msc to pop up. I don't know what I've been feeding this VM. Here it is. So there's a few policies. Computer configuration, administrative templates, system and device installation, and device installation restrictions. And here you have two policies to prevent. So prevent installation of devices using drivers that match these device setup classes. This could be used for FireWire, so all FireWire will be blocked. We need a value here. I've got them on my computer here. Here we go. Nice user interface. So here we go. That's in. And also remember to click the also apply to matching devices that already are installed. And then there's another one, prevent installation of devices that match any of these device IDs. Enable. And then we'll inject the Thunderbolt value here. So where do I keep getting these values from? You could get them from the KP article, or you can get them from my Twitter, or you can find out. So device management, meaning device manager, just find the thing you're trying to prevent, go to properties, details, hardware IDs, right-click copy, or class GID, right-click copy. The longer the GUI, the longer the ID is, the more exact it is for that certain component. So you might be in a situation where there's plenty of those, so your disk drive should have plenty. Hardware IDs, the longer one, the more exact one. You could block this USB key exactly, or you could block USB keys. Or you could block all disks, which might not be a good idea. Some things are easy to block, FireWire, BitLocker. There's no way of blocking PCI Express with a policy. It's built into the hardware too deeply, because the computer would stop working if you actually got the policy there. So this doesn't work for everything. Okay. Cold boot attacks. These are the ones that I get asked all the time, and these are like the coolest ones, but these are also the easiest to stop nowadays. So what's a cold boot attack? A cold boot attack means that you find a computer which is online or in standby, so the memory is still alive. Then you take cold spray, you spray the memory chips with the cold spray, and then you take a tiny, tiny Linux kernel on a USB stick, stick it on the computer, boot it up with Linux. Why it's a tiny, tiny kernel? Because you want to be overriding as less memory as possible. So there's more chance of you finding the BitLocker key from the memory. BitLocker is an offline protection, meaning that BitLocker is totally protected only in hibernate and shutdown mode. But on the other modes, standby, online, the memory has the key needed. So you could try to cool it down to make the time a bit longer, because the memory keeps its values for a while. Just use cold spray. Countermeasures, easy. Only UEFI machines with secure boot on. No way of booting your machine with the Linux kernel. Only supported Linux kernel is so big that it just doesn't work, because there is a single Linux kernel that is supported nowadays. But secure boot is something that was in Windows 8, and it requires UEFI. So secure boot means that the operating system loaded on the computer needs to be approved by Microsoft, verified. And it's checked for a digital signature as well. So there's no way of booting this Linux kernel. Secure boot rules. They're really good. This is something that when Microsoft talks about secure boot, they don't remember to tell you this, although this is like the best selling point for me. They're just talking about being able to prevent bootkits and rootkits and stuff like that. But it's actually really, really important if you're building a BitLocker implementation. Then you could technically be removing the frozen memory from the computer. Now that you cannot boot this computer with Linux, you could just freeze down the memory chips, take them with you, put them in a cold container, transfer them to your Linux laboratory, put them in a computer that has a memory chip reader, and read the contents. That's why I'm telling you there's 10% of people that won't be using only TPM. They want the PIN code, which would prevent you from doing this. But about 90%, let's think about it now. I don't know how many of, is there anyone here who knows that you can actually execute this? One, two, I usually get at least a few. So there's always someone probably who will break it. We have to have some countermeasures against it, so that's probably what we're going to go through next. First of all, it's kind of hard to do it with an system on a chip machine, SoC. So you can see that's a Surface motherboard. There are no chips to remove. You have to remove the chips from the motherboard, and now it gets quite tough. But I'm sure there's still someone who can do it. You know why I'm asking this? Because I have the challenge in the end, and I don't want to be giving you this. Still someone who thinks you can do it. Someone's leaving. You're not going to get the Surface. Okay, as I said, some people will need it. We get to a certain point when you have to remember this security, usability, cost. You have to remember there are certain different environments. For example, I'm working a lot with European militaries, and European militaries use these for BitLocker authentication. It's a company called LockIT, which has a physical PIN code keyboard on this. So it's physically encrypted. You have to first open up the encryption with this PIN code, put it in your machine to open up the encryption code for your BitLocker, or the encryption key. So you have different environments. Not everything is suitable for everyone. Now, if we're talking about hacking these computers, we have to be realistic. I think we have to have some common sense in this. I will always be in a situation where someone's asking me if I would implement a Microsoft VPN. And I would say, yes, I would implement a Microsoft VPN. And there's a Cisco guy. There's at least a few hats from Cisco here. Don't know if you're Cisco guys or not. But always, there's someone who says that there's no way of building a secure VPN with Microsoft. You have to have Cisco VPN. There's always someone, but still you have to have some common sense in it. So just to test it out a little bit, I think we have a few scenarios, and I'm going to have a few volunteers here. As I know, there's a few Finnish people here. They would like to participate, wouldn't you? So I'm kind of betting on it. So there's this dude here. That's the nerd one. That's the nerd one who has the coolest ever T-shirt, of course, and says that let's just freeze the memory, rip it off a machine, put it in a Linux machine with a microkernel, and try to find the key. Okay? So that's number one. We've got our first volunteer who will get a little bit heads up here. So I've got a Surface RT here, which is only a TPM protected. There's no PIN code to protect the BitLocker. There is a PIN code to protect my machine. I'm just going to give it to him, and he can start cracking and try to crack it. I hope he doesn't have too much equipment with him, but I know the guy, he's quite... Yeah, he's quite good. Or do you think that it might be still that the reality is something else? Petri just won his speaker idol competition, by the way. So you have a PIN code on your computer. Okay. He's cracking that. I'm going to try and get Petri's PIN code. How am I going to do it? I'm going to do it with something called the PIN code recovery key.
I think you have it now.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you. Let's give a big hand to our volunteers. Thank you, guys. Did you make it? No? Okay. Can you give it back? Thank you. I won. If that wouldn't be the case, I actually have an 8-inch tablet full of Finnish soap opera. That works even better, but I didn't even have to go there, so we got it. I was in Atlanta before I came here, and you might wonder how much fun I had because I had to take this on the airplane. Like, what is that? It's my personal item. I was thinking about it. I'm from Finland. I don't know the thing. I don't know how to behave here. So I was thinking about it. Like, if they're asking me, like, why do you need it? Like, have you seen the cockpit doors nowadays? I didn't go there. Okay. So there's the tough guy. Probably still the more realistic one, if you ask me. Give me your PIN code or I'll make you watch Jersey Shore for the rest of your life. That should be horrible. More info, you can get this really, there's a really good white paper and a TechNet article. So you can try and you can find more information there if you want. Next, we're going to talk about different security levels for different environments. So we have to remember that there are certain places that need certain policies. What are we really against? Are we really against this international man of mystery? Just that you won't blame me. Microsoft is really strict about having copyrighted material on these PowerPoints. So I actually went into Office Online Picture Gallery looking for secret agent, and that's what came up. So it's the best I can do. International man of mystery, or would it be this guy? I call him the Crutcher. This is here because of a story from my company in Finland. There was someone breaking into our office. He broke into the office and stole 2 laptops and a projector. Stole them, and after that we got a call from the security company telling us that someone broke into your office, but you're fine. I got your 2 laptops and the projector back because the guy who was trying to steal them was getting out of the office with crutches. And he had honestly walked and caught the guy. So just again, keep it realistic. There's the Lockheed one that I showed, bigger picture of it. So there might be high security places. I've been working with military. And many times my customers say that we thought everyone would be using a smart card. Smart cards would be something for the future. Why didn't they do it? Mainly because of they were thinking that smart card readers would be on every single PC in a few years. Did it happen? No. So now they need to buy a smart card reader. So many of them didn't. If I'm talking to the military, they did. They have 30,000 PCs, and they bought 2 smart card readers for every single PC that they own. So 60,000 smart card readers. Who can guess why there's 2 on every computer? That would be good, but no. Not 2-factor authentication. It's because of run as. All admins are required to log on as a limited user and then open up their admin tools with their admin user. So you need 2. Since Vista, you can have 2 certificates on a single smart card, but in Windows XP, you couldn't. So you, if you were using run as, you actually needed 2. So what about some policies? What can we do to enforce BitLocker? What we could do is, first of all, force screensaver and prompt for passwords, always. Because now your computers, if they're using only TPM, if you find the computer, open up the latch, you will see a logon screen. There's no PIN code asked. There's no USB key needed. So you do want to make sure it's locked. That's kind of an easy one. No username on logon screen or logout screens. Why? Because DMA. If you have to allow DMA attacks. Where's the wrench? I hit myself with it. If you're going to allow the use of FireWire, Thunderbolt or such, there are tools. For example, Petri here has shown me some really cool demos on how to use a Linux box to attach to a living machine and then telling Windows that the next password will be okay. I don't know if you've seen this demo, but that's ridiculous. Windows kernel has a 0 or 1 bit, which tells Windows if the next typed in password is correct. So rather than guessing for a password, you take a kernel debugger and you change the bit to 1. And then you can write any password. And it will just say, okay, I'll let you in. Because that's possible with the DMA attacks. You have to change it to the opposite. You have to think about it like they know the password, but they have to guess the user ID. That's why you take those. You force hibernate. As I said, as long as the computer memory is alive, there's a possibility of someone reading it from there. I'm reading the encryption key from there. So one way to force is to force hibernation, meaning that your memory contents will be saved to a file, which will be on the encrypted disk, and the memory will not be alive. So prevent standby, said in another way. The last one is a really cool one, which seems that not many of my colleagues at least even know exists, which is the possibility since Windows 8 for you to invalidate BitLocker keys or invalidate the TPM contents when someone guesses the Windows logon password wrong too many times. If you have a PIN code for your TPM, you guess PIN code 5 times wrong, it'll just lock the TPM. Okay? If you have a normal Windows session and you try to log on 20 times or 5 times, depending on your environment, then it will lock the user account. But what this one does is when you type in your Windows password too many times wrong, it will invalidate the TPM data for BitLocker, meaning that if you boot the machine, it will actually ask for a BitLocker recovery key. Meaning that instead of the old way of only blocking the certain user account from trying to guess anymore, you can actually block certain devices from your environment. It's actually very powerful and useful, but it's just one of those tiny settings that doesn't get so much space on the Microsoft articles. How to get this? You can get this from my blog, or you can get this from my Twitter account. So what I'll have there is a zip file, which has a pre-built GPO. And you can just take that GPO and inject it to a group policy object. So I'll do it here. Just do a new BitLocker and import settings from that zip file. I'll do it here also because I want to show you the settings. Some of the settings are security settings and some of the settings are administrative templates, so both. So let's choose that one and just take a report. Settings. So here we go. There's first of all a few security options. So interactive logon, do not display last username. Interactive logon, display user information when the session is locked. And then that's the new one. Interactive logon, machine account lockout threshold. That will actually invalidate the TPM data. Then there's the two that we saw earlier. So these are the ones pre-built for you, meaning that's for blocking FireWire and Thunderbolt. Then there's something called allow standby states from S1 to S3, and that's disabled. And then also a require a password when a computer wakes. And a few ones just to enable a screensaver and make it password protected. So, small recap. If you asked me to do an implementation for you with BitLocker, I'd say that BitLocker implementation always starts with choosing correct hardware. I was just in a big project in Finland, and they were doing these specifications for offers that they are asking from different providers. And I just told them, like, you have to always remember to include this stuff if you're thinking about BitLocker. So they will only get offers for hardware which is okay for BitLocker. So no Thunderbolt, FireWire, or PCI Express, USB 3 rules, UEFI with secure boot on. It's better if you password protect your UEFI, so someone won't just switch off Secure Boot. Although, actually, if you switch off Secure Boot, it'll change your boot environment and your TPM will be locked. But it's still a best practice to also have the UEFI passwords. You always have a TPM. Nowadays, you can even take TPMs to Russia. As I'm working in Finland, we're just next to Russia. So we've had lots of situations where our companies couldn't buy TPM-enabled computers because they weren't allowed to take them to the Russian side. So nowadays you can, but there might be countries that are not allowing TPMs to be used. Even better if it's dense memory and onboard. So if you've got onboard memory, that's bad for a geek like me who wants to upgrade his machine all the time with new and bigger memory. But for security-wise, it would be better if it was on chip. I mean on the motherboard, on integrated memory. Four strong passwords or phrases. I always use phrases. I try to teach our customers to use phrases as well. So just makes it a bit easier. Instead of having a capital Z, exclamation mark, 3-2, small a, big b, small c, capital C. Instead of that, I always have something like Petri drank 24 beers. It's a lot easier for me to remember. You have to have the letters, you have to have the numbers in between of words always, never at the end or the beginning. That's a really common mistake. So just have stronger passwords, easier to remember, so that's why we use phrases usually. No administrative rights for end users. You don't want to have them switching off their protection, so take it out. And remember the principle of about 95%. I said 90% of mine. But it's a more of a Microsoft number, which is the 95. So 95% are good with TPM only, so that should be your aim. If you have need for two-factor authentication, take the PIN code. I'd rather take that than the USB key, but if you're worried about your users being tortured, then you can take the USB key. Okay, BitLocker key backup and recovery. A few words about this one. Save your recovery keys to AD. If someone asks me about implementing Windows 7 or Windows 8, I always tell them that the biggest project on top of the OS installation itself is BitLocker. So that's something that requires the most changes in Active Directory schema and Active Directory permissions. So you have to be ready for BitLocker before implementing it. Nowadays, there's actually good documentation what you need to do. There's pre-built scripts for allowing the backups to go to Active Directory. Why does it need different permissions? It's because the computer account will be creating a new object below its computer account object. Remember, it's not computer account attribute. It's an object below the computer account. And it will write it there. So it has to have permissions to do it themselves, not you doing it. If you're using BitLocker to go for USB sticks, you'd better go with DRA, Data Recovery Agent. Now, that's the weirdest thing. Microsoft seems to think that USB keys are used to something totally different than I am thinking. For me, one of the most important things about a USB key is the ability to take data from another computer to another one. But Microsoft seems to think that these are mainly meant to expand your hard disk space on your own computer. So it's like really silly. But it seems so, because if you take these, let's say you have a customer asking for an encrypted USB stick. You would probably take the stick, you would encrypt it, and give it to him or her. Not asking, here's a stick, you just encrypted. Okay? So what happens? The weirdest thing is that now you put this in your computer, enable BitLocker encryption, and the recovery key is written below your computer account. Then you give the stick to your customer, they leave, and in 2 years they forget the password. And they ask you for the recovery key. Number one, does your computer account even exist anymore? Number two, how hard is it to find it? There are find functions to do it, but still. It's like silly. So you're better with DRA. DRA means you can have an organizational unit, and any computer or any disk that's encrypted below that OU, in computers belonging to that OU, you will be able to open those with a certificate. So it puts a recovery key on the media and encrypts it with the public key of the data recovery agent. So the data recovery agent can open up the key and then open up the whole volume itself. So certificate-based. A lot better if you're using sticks. The bad thing about these ones are, I mean, normal USB sticks is, of course, that these are not, you can open these in Linux or Mac without different software. So actually, these hardware encrypted are quite good, in a way. They're not that expensive anymore. But if you're going to use BitLocker, just remember DRA. And of course, if you got money, you can just start singing. There's an old song from, I think, Hanson Brothers or something. Yeah, they were singing this, mdop, papa, mdop. Probably not, but anyway, mdop is the weirdest acronym out there. But mdop is Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack, which has a feature below it called the MBAM, which is Microsoft BitLocker Administration and Monitoring. That was the hardest part of my session for me, to remember those two. You can talk to guys at the Microsoft booths. There are people very good at MDOP and MBAM. But MBAM is the enterprise version of this all. So what MBAM gives you is an encrypted SQL Server database. Some people say MBAM is not that expensive because you can take any SQL Server. But the thing is that you actually need SQL Server database to be encrypted. So if you know the SQL Server licensing, it's not that cheap always to get the encryption on it. You usually need the enterprise version. So you need that. You can do policy-based deployment, so you just set a policy for your whole company. All of these computers need to be BitLocker enabled. You can monitor to keep it compliant as well. And now the newest one, MDOP 2014, has the new MBAM 2.5, which gives you a self-service portal for retrieving the recovery passwords. There's more integration with SCCM and also support for the newer Windows versions. So, penetration challenge. Play with me. Let's play. I forgot these two computers at the airport. You're the bad guy or girl. You find them. Computer specifications are here. There's two computers. The other one is a Surface 2 RT, and the other one is a ZenBook Prime UX31A. You open them up, they're locked. They're password protected, but they're locked. They're not off, so they're on. Both machines are on. You can see that they're both running Windows 8.1. I'll tell you that the passwords are complex, so we don't think about passwords. They're protected. BitLocker has only TPM authentication. There's no PIN code, there's no USB keys needed. It's just the TPM. Computer has UAC, user account control enabled, no admin rights for logged on user. There's AppLocker preventing software from running on the computer if I don't want it. And then there's a normal protection of a firewall, and I also use IPsec on my computers. So now I'm honestly hoping that there's not that many answers, because the whole purpose of this session was to go through all the different scenarios and how to break in. But if you still have suggestions on how you would start to open these computers and try to get the data, now is your chance to be known as a bulletproof BitLocker cracker. Anyone? We've got microphones set up for you. I trust myself quite well to know that there won't be that many. But I'm sure there's a few. There's one. Okay, thank you. I'll repeat the question. Try the shift key option. Won't work because of you having to have to go to the C drive to change the setHC exit to CMD, and you are not able to get to the C drive without turning off the computer, opening it up with a different OS. What do I have enabled? Secure boot, so no external outside of Microsoft. And I've got a TPM, so you can't change the boot environment. More? Freeze the memory. Okay, fair enough. So the next suggestion is freeze the memory. That's plausible. That might work in a way, but it would need you to take the surface 2RT, open up the magnesium shell, and get the chips off the motherboard. So, as I said, there's probably some that can do it. I would say that that's possible. Now, the other computer was there also, ZenBook Prime. You can probably guess that there's a reason why I have these two models here. That's because ZenBook Prime has only built-in memory. So you cannot take the chips out of it. Good question. So, good suggestion. The suggestion was that could I use my friend's way of having a Linux attached to the computer and then changing the password so they could bypass my password. Otherwise, yes, but neither Surface RT or ZenBook Prime have the needed connections for it. They only have USB. There's one. So the next question, or the next suggestion is something that I was waiting for, and that's a good one. That's something that applies to any OS and any encryption, which is that now the computer is running, so you should concentrate on online attacks instead of offline attacks, and that's a good one. So it's on the network. I'm not telling you that BitLocker by itself is a bulletproof solution for security. You need different layers of security. For example, here, I've got an IPsec authentication for inbound connections. So the next thing is that you might start doing it, but you would need a computer that has a certificate from my certificate authority to go talk to my network. Thank you very much. I was waiting for it. I was hoping someone would say it. Okay, next one. That's the best one, and that's the exactly. So, social engineering or recovery key? I bet if you were telling me you're gonna hit me with this, probably if you hit me with this, you won't get the pin. But threatening to hit me with this would work. So social engineering is by far the best thing. What I actually do usually is I have a PowerPoint which collects passwords. So I got a PowerPoint file that can be sent to someone with a really good bait. Usually the bait is something only, it's just something really simple, like it might be something of, let's see, I could show you, might be here. I know I have a few minutes, so I'll show you one from Tech Days Netherlands. Is it this one? So it might be something like this. This PowerPoint is actually infected. So for a certain audience, this one is good. You know they will click it. In Finland, I did this. I don't remember if Petri was actually with me there, but in Finland we did this for over 1,000 people, and we had the same kind of a PowerPoint here, and it said, the 10 quickest to open up this, click on download, and enable, we'll get a free Nokia Lumia 900. And over 1,000 security experts, you should have seen them banging on their computers, and we were yelling like, no, 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 stop it, stop it, stop it. So by far, social engineering is the best answer to this question. That's exactly what I would do. I would call them. I tend to do this I call people, I inject the bait on my own computer, which will crack the domain admin passwords, and then I call our help desk. This is Sami. I'm literally in front of 300 people at TechEd, and my computer is not working. Can you please remote desktop into my computer and fix it? Then they will RDP into my computer. My computer will have a scheduled task, which will run the command netgroup domain admin sami add domain, which will instantly make me a domain admin. So social engineering is by far the best and easiest way of cracking anything, I'd say. Also BitLocker, but that's a really good one. Thank you. More. 5 minutes. One in the middle. Exactly, the suggestion was that the recovery keys are not taken care of. So it might be that it's written on a piece of paper, which is in the same bag. I actually had a customer telling me that, I saw that you've got that USB key for BitLocker protection. I use it as well, but I've got this backpack, and it usually just almost breaks up when I have it on the computer. It's like he's having the key inserted in the computer in his backpack. So yeah, fair enough. That might happen. You could have, and people are even told you should have backups. So you can have the printout of your recovery key and you give it to your wife to secure it. And then you have to have another wife for making it redundant. Okay, I think that's kind of enough. I hope you had the chance and I hope you believe me at least a bit about it. What we'll still have here to cover is mainly logistics. So if you have any questions, just shoot me an email, ask me on Twitter. I've got a coolest black belt troubleshooting 8.1 session on Wednesday. I hope you join me there. Be early, should be full. There's some related content. You can find me on the device showcase tomorrow at 10:45 or Thursday at 10:45. At the expo. Windows track resources, we'll quickly go through that. And please, if you like the session, the most important thing for us speakers and the best way to make us come here again and let Microsoft us back in the next year is to fill out the evals. So with that, thank you very much for joining.